I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
This show was so great. Judge Joe Brown, for I want your permission to call you a nigger because I like rap people. I really like them. And you guys call each other nigger, and it's okay. So I'm going to be black for a minute. I'm going to call Joe Brown my nigger that's on this incredible platform. It's so great. And I love your show. And I just, everybody needs to listen to the judge because he's the one person that respects me. He listens to me. And he's the one that's trying to tell you guys how to get out of the slums, how to get out of the projects and become someone. So I want everybody to turn their dial and to listen to Judge Joe Brown, because some of you still have a chance. America's a great country, even though you guys were slaves. But you know what? You guys did a great two-step, even when you had a ball on your ankle. You guys have been slaves for so long. You're so broke with the Democrats till the rats are bringing you their cheese. What do you have to lose? I mean, you look at Nancy Pelosi. You look at Cory Booker. I mean, he's a Fruit Loop. I mean, really. Joe Biden, he looks like Dracula lost his Grecian formula. Kamala Harris, a Kamala. And Willie Brown can tell you about her. I mean, she's got knee pads. She's got multiple. She's got some that are glow in the dark, I guess, so she can get around in the Capitol or the City Hall in San Francisco. You know what I'm talking about. I'm the best person. I'm the only one that would even consider, if I didn't give you reparations, I would at least extend food stamps until 2024. What you say?
Radio, DJ.
One nation, one station.
Okay, Philo the Great, you know that the real Donald Trump would never talk like that, right? Big shout out to all the real Trump supporters. I will see you down in the comments section. Please make sure to drop a line or two, and we will get back to you shortly. Right now, you are listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I am Valerie Denise Jones, apologizing in advance for the poor audio quality. For whatever reason, I cannot get the panelists and or the guests to mute their mics when they know that their background is noisy. Working on it right now, trying to rectify that problem. What I'm going to do right now is patch you into a previously recorded live broadcast regarding real versus fake news. So leave your comments below. I hope you enjoy this episode.
You know that tomorrow is going to be the funeral for Elijah Cummings.
You should have a new epitaph. You listening?
Yes.
R.I.P. Here lies a good Negro, comma. He was a good pet.
He was a good pet. We were talking just yesterday about Thomas V. Mike Miller, who is the, until today, has been the Maryland Senate president from 1987 until he resigned today. And has been in the Maryland Senate for 44 years. He's a great grandson of Mary Surratt, the woman that was hung for her role in conspiring to have Abraham Lincoln assassinated because they were pro-slavery and they were angry that Abraham Lincoln had announced on April 9th, 1865, that he wanted blacks to have the right to vote. And Mike Miller, whose family are the German mafia that work with the Italian mafia of the D'Alessandro, which is Nancy Pelosi's family, they have done everything they could to destroy black people in the state of Maryland and retard progress. You have the wealthiest counties in which blacks live. That's Prince George's County, That's Charles County, it's Howard County, it's Baltimore County. They've done everything they could to destroy black people. And on the Beautiful Struggle Facebook page, Mike Miller announced that Baltimore was an effing ghetto that he hated. They've leaked this tape out. This is the same man who's made certain he works hand in hand with the Fraternal Order of Police, where they could plant guns, murder, assassinate, and kill people. In particular, when my cousin had a policeman break his spine on camera, Mike Miller fought to make certain that all the police who were, they filmed them killing my cousin, that they got off. So you don't get police convicted in Baltimore for murder because Mike Miller, who's a descendant of the Bryan family, which is what's the largest slaveholding association of families practically on the East Coast. And all he does is hurt black people. He's now dying from, prostate cancer, which is fitting because he's always been a dick to our people.
We're going to have a couple surprises for you this morning. The first is not going to be a surprise to most of you, in that, after 34 years of being president of the Senate, my mind is still strong, but my body is weak.
At the beginning of the session this year, President Mike Miller announced he has cancer.
You have good days and you have bad days.
At the end of the session, he promised to keep senators informed as to his condition. Today, that came with a decision.
I suffer from anemia. I suffer from fatigue. And this is a full-time job. It's a statewide job. And we need somebody younger. And we have those people present in the room today.
The Democratic caucus voted unanimously to nominate Baltimore Senator Bill Ferguson to be elected president in January. Miller will hold his seat as a member of the Senate and is already working on issues for next year.
We're going to pass Kerwin this year. We're going to save the Preakness. We're going to do a lot of good things.
And they're going to have to adjust to seeing Mike Miller seated on the floor with them instead of standing at the front of the chamber.
It's been a great run. I have enjoyed every minute of it. I think the Senate is more inclusive because of me. It's been productive because of all of us working together. And it's been a great place to live and a place to work. And for 34 years, it's been the happiest years of my life.
Until January, Mike Miller is still president of the Maryland Senate.
This man is so evil. He's so evil. Until if he were to die, you know what? I bet you the whole city of Baltimore, black folks will start doing the electric slide. And last night I was at the Reginald Lewis Museum for the group, it's a positive group called The Beautiful Struggle. And they were talking about reparations and marijuana and all this kind of stuff. And I cut through all the BS and said, why did we black folks take so much crap off of Mike Miller? Why can't we get rid of him? And the man told me, well, he's sick. I says, amen. They said he's dying. I said, hallelujah. People were shocked. I tell Mike Miller that he needs to drop dead. And I've had to do that to a black member of Congress. Yes, I did tell Donald Payne when I went to him because they were raping and enslaving, gang raping and torturing black girls in Libya. And he worked on Africa, and I asked him, was there anything he could do? Could he call Obama? They're the ones that funded the people. Go light on them. Stop killing our black girls. It's not right to kill and rape and enslave black girls and castrate and kill black men. And you know what this black member of Congress, Donald Payne Sr., told me? Well, you know, these things happen. And I don't know, when he said that to me, I snapped. And I asked him, what the hell use is a nigga congressman if you won't defend black women and black girls? What kind of man are you? And I said, I had folks in the movement, and these things kind of happen is how you justify when I told you they're cutting off black women's breasts and spelling whore with their blood, and that doesn't faze you? And I asked him, excuse me, Congressman, is there genocide in Africa that you don't like? You didn't do anything for Sierra Leone, for Liberia, for Sudan, for Rwanda, for Burundi, I mean, Angola. I mean, all these people dying and none of it bothers you? It says, you know what, you can make a phone call to Obama, you won't lose your pension. You can't do anything And that's how it is here. Black folks, they only want personal power for themselves and maybe a few friends and nothing for the rest of us, all the while telling us about civil rights and how they're great leaders, and they've done nothing for us. I know what it's like to go to Maxine Waters, the one that looks like Pepe the Frog with no wig on, and ask them, people, they're poisoning our sisters with this Depo. It's causing osteoporosis, heart attack, stroke, diabetes, suicide, all of this, suicidality. And a little white woman that looked like the cartoon character Broomhilda told us Maxine Waters wasn't interested in the fact that drugs were being pushed on black women that caused sterility, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and all these other cancers. They weren't interested. Don't disturb us. This is what I've seen from these black electors. Don't bother us. Well, who do you talk to when folks are killing your community?
267-867, your mic is live.
Yes, good evening, Valerie, and to Judge Brown and to all of the guests here tonight.
Hello, Richard.
God bless you. I thought it was the conversation was about some of the black congresspersons, in particular Elijah Cumming, who just died very recently. I just wanted to just make a comment about the gentleman. You know, a lot of these people are dealing with issues that are important issues, but not issues that reflect on the plight that people that have lived here for 400 years continuously go under. And Cummings was no different than the others. One thing, and I like what Judge Brown said, I read his Twitter account, and one thing he was saying, and he was discussing, I think, at another time as well, about Cummings and I are the same age. We both are born 1951. And so I know exactly the historical perspective of the black community during that time. Yes, I was around during the civil rights movement and all that, but I was a young boy. We were born in 1951. The civil rights movement began in 1955, as we understand it, as we know it, with Dr. King and Rosa Parks and all of that movement. And at that time, I was 4 years old, and so was Elijah Cumming. When Dr. King died, we were still in high school when Dr. King died in 1968. I was in high school in 11th grade, and so was Elijah Cumming. So we were not. Cummings was not a leader. We were aware of, we were supportive of Dr. King. I remember meeting him in South Philadelphia on Broad Street, listening to him, not fighting as a leader, standing with him like Jesse Jackson and Ralph Abernathy, just listening as a boy to this great leader. So I understand, you know, that we're trying to make Elijah Cumming a great civil rights leader, but really, every time you read it in the newspaper about the man, the headline always relates to his being an antagonist to President Trump. That's his note of fame, if you will. Now look at it realistically. If Elijah Cummings has been a congressperson for 25 years, and Donald Trump has been president for less than 4 years, what was he doing before Donald Trump became president? Because certainly his noteworthy Hall of Fame moment was his opposition to Donald Trump and his administration. But the man served over 20 years before Donald Trump even came on the scene. Now, he criticized Donald Trump, calling Baltimore a very bad place, a very negative terminology. But I remember he did as well in 1997. He described his own city as a gutter-type community. So now, but 20 years later, you talk about this president speaking ill about your city, but you yourself, who serves as a congressperson of that city, representing that city in Washington, described your own city as a gutter rat community. So, you know, I don't know what – I look at all these leaders, and I look at the cities that they are representing and even the districts they represent, and they are some of the most poorest, where the people are living in tents, homeless people are there, defecated streets and all of this type of thing. And why aren't they concentrating their efforts more on that And yet they fight. They just said recently, I read an article just recently, in fact, just today, and they were saying that if the Democrats don't stand for DACA, if the Democrats don't stand for the immigrants, if the Republicans don't yield to these their demands for justice for these people, they're going to be like a voting block against them. Anything they propose, they're going to vote against it. So you stand for those who are not a part of your community, directly a part of your community. They certainly are not a part of the American organizations of African Americans who were slaves and their descendants. They certainly are not representing them. Yet you stand strong. We're not going to move. We're going to stand against you. We're going to vote for everything and override vetoes, whatever you propose. But where is that same zeal? Where is that same commitment? Where is that same righteous indignation as it relates to your own folk? So I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not impressed by anybody in Congress, whether you be a senator, whether you be a congressperson representing the House of Representatives. I'm not impressed by African Americans, that black caucus that prides itself on standing for everybody's rights, fighting for everybody's struggle and everyone else's struggles, but refuse even to speak on. Look how long it took most of them even to sign up for the H.R. 40, which was talking about just studying reparations, the idea of reparations. Most of them refused. Most of them said it was a pipe dream that could never come true. But here they are, these same men and women are standing strong. We're going to stand united with our Latino neighbors. We're going to stand united with our Latino friends. And no matter what, we're going to go down with them if they go down. We're going to stand with them if they stand. And we're going to move forward with them as they move forward. But you don't say that about your own folk.
That's right.
You don't say that about your
you
own folk.
You know what?
Bishop, these characters stand with everybody but their own people.
Yeah,
that's right.
This morning I woke up and I fell asleep with the television on, and it was on the Science Channel. So it was an interesting program. They were talking about polluted places, horribly polluted places. And they were just finishing up with Chernobyl. Obviously, everybody knows about Chernobyl. Then they went to Baltimore, and this guy is in a large kayak with all of this protective gear on, and he says, this water is contaminated. It's poison. There are children over there splashing in the water, but the elected officials here will not do anything about this horrible pollution
and
the water off of Baltimore.
Judge, yes, Elijah sir. Cummings was the chairperson for the Oversight Committee. He could have done something. He refused. I had a black council person. And when I was in the Flint hearing, he announced he did a run-through of all the poisonous, polluted cities, which means he knew fully all about it. The Bible says if you know good to do and you don't do it, it's sin. So how can see him other than arrogant, reprobate sinner?
It's bad. They said this has been pointed out to the authorities again and again, and they mentioned him by inference, the congressman that represents this area has been doing things for places all around the country. For some reason, he refuses to take any action or encourage any action against this horrible pollution. So they won't even put up
Mike Miller. They want to kill the people. They want to kill the people, sir. This is why you hear me talking about this Nazi named Mike Miller. All of the blacks here, there are 55 blacks in the house in Annapolis. That's a huge block, like there's 55 in the National Congress and Senate. And they're all afraid for their careers. So they're just like the Jews in Europe, the Judenstadt. The affluent Jews that helped the Nazis kill the poor Jews. That's what we've got. We've got what would be called a Schwarze Judenstadt. We don't have any black leadership.
You're right about that.
Let me add a point of concern of mine, and that is that men and women like this, who are elected primarily by African Americans and other minorities, continuously are reelected time and time again. He served 12 terms, talking about Elijah Cummings now, he served 12 terms. We've had congresspersons who were corrupt, who did nothing for their city, that served for 59 years. 59,
yes.
Not no 49, 29, 59 years.
Yes.
And their cities were still the most degraded, the most impoverished areas in the nation. And yet they're
yes.
elected over and over and over again. We create a monster, and instead of killing it, we feed it. And then it becomes a worse monster and a bigger monster. And we wonder why we're being devoured. It's
right.
because we ain't killing the monster. You got to kill a monster.
We have to
You got to elect that, him or her out of office.
I've got
to
say.
12 years is too long for any congressperson.
Yeah.
And
one of the things I said is that the Democratic Party must die so black people can live. That's what I say.
I agree.
Again, I said this earlier, the epitaph is, here lies a good Negro. He was well-trained, obedient, did many tricks, and was a great mascot for the Democratic Party.
That's right. That's all he was. And it's sad, and I can just tell you, when you live in Washington, the things you see that would blow your mind of the slave behavior of people that you would be told to look up to. And it's just awful. It's just Elijah. It's everywhere. You know, we're poisoned by lead everywhere. And see, the man said, these people are immigrants. They're not immigrants. You're an illegal resident, an illegal migrant. These are people who have no rights under the Constitution, and they're fighting for them. Okay, he was talking about people laying in their feces and holding facilities at the border, and yet I see people in their feces every day out here in Baltimore. Okay, every single solitary day, and it's so awful for them, and they could fix it, and they won't. They have no desire to. This is just, it's like our city council in D.C., the councilman telling me that they know 7% of the children are poisoned acutely by lead, but lead is a hot issue. So our little lesbian mayor, she's a lesbian. She looks like Arsenio with no mustache. She's suppressing this thing on lead. So our people die. Let me tell you. They use lead paint here in Baltimore, and they use it all over the country in public housing to kill black people. In New York, there's like a $3 billion suit. In D.C., to cover up the fact that they poison the people, they want to knock down a third of the public housing and disperse the people so they can't organize. This is being done by black Democrats who are on the tit of the Ku Klux Klan, Nazi wannabe Democratic Party. And no, I don't think Republicans are our friends. We should be our own friends, and God our greatest friend. That's my saying. And I will never, as long as I'm here, God help me to smash this party for what it's done to my people. God help me.
Ms. Cassandra, I think we're ready. Can you please start over?
Okay. Sure. My name is Cassandra McDonald, and I am a civil rights activist and president of the Euclid NAACP, as well as the Lawyers Foundation. And I have been sitting, listening attentively to what has been said. And it's unfortunate that I do have to agree with what is being said. You know, what I've noticed, which is disheartening, is that we have fallen into a culture where we think that the people who are being the loudest are the ones that are getting things done, and that's not true. we hear a lot of arguing, a lot of back and forth, a lot of fist pumping and things like that, you know, in Congress, especially when it comes to the Democratic Party. And at the same time, I don't see any influence in what exactly we need to be changed within our lives and within our cultures, and I'm speaking as a Black woman in the Black community. I also am very disheartened that it appears that the government has failed to recognize that it's the people and our issues that are really supposed to set the agenda and the tone for what we want to happen and what we need to happen within our districts and our municipalities and so forth. We have fallen into a culture where we look at a charismatic leader instead of a leader who knows, not only knows what needs to happen, but moves forward in making sure that legislation is proposed, that they support the legislation, they back the legislation, and do things that are that has the most effect on our lives, especially in a negative way. And I don't see that happening. I also don't see where they are bringing up and preparing the next generation to take over in those spots instead of, you know, stacking the seats so that they're, you know, their counterparts are switching the seats. So the same behavior, this poor behavior in Congress, in government, continues. This is, you know, I just don't understand how a lot of Democrats and even Republicans went under this thing. It was this thing, oh, I'm a progressive Democrat. And you had just a few progressive Republicans. And what I wanted to tell people is that progressive is not a party. These people are saying that I have a progressive state of mind, but where is the progress? I don't see it. They jump on bandwagons because this person has been in office. This person is well-known. But being well-known and being in office for years and years does not mean that that time was spent effectively addressing the issues that needed to be addressed. So I agree wholeheartedly, and we need to stop pretending like we don't see it, stop jumping on bandwagons because everybody's saying someone is great when you can sit and look at their legislation, sit and look at what they've done, and you definitely can raise an argument to that point. Now, when he was younger, you know, we did see him go through the things that he did as a young man in the civil rights movement. But here's the problem. Look at his legacy. Like one gentleman said earlier, 25 years. Trump's been in office for 4 years. What was being done? Yes, he said he was against, he wanted gun control. Yes, he said that he was against, you know, the opioid crisis. But who wasn't? Who isn't? When is someone going to look at the real issues, like always having to fight for voting rights, looking at things that we can handle this police brutality and this discrimination and things like that? I don't see that. I see a lot of loud people pointing fingers and not getting anything done. And at the end of the day, they get the accolades. That's what's happening.
That. Let me say something about that. Any Negro that advocates disarming his people so they're helpless in the face of these white supremacists is a dog.
Yes.
And that's exactly what that scoundrel is, and every other one of those Black caucus members that do that are in the House of Representatives, I guess that makes them good House Negroes that want the rest of the Black folk to be defenseless if their white masters decide to go out and exterminate them. And I can't see that being an unrealistic possibility.
And this is exactly what the Jewish
the Bill of Rights, they've gotten awful Nazi-like. And as a matter of fact, that old LGBT thing, if you look at the Nazi Party, they had a whole lot of homosexuality that they were pushing, particularly those brown shirt SA types under Rahm that were going around doing Kristallnacht and all that other stuff.
It's true.
They were awful.
It's always all of the fascist groups.
Kind of thing off today.
All of the fascist groups have LGBT. Lincoln Rockwell was killed over a gay spat in 1967 when I was 2 years old. Okay. Here, the American Nazi Party is a gay thing, big time. The most reactionary people, so strong. The Nazi, the right wing stuff you see all over Europe, it's a gay thing, everywhere. It's the same people, and these are the folks that are so called. I call them the Congressional Black Circus. They're aligned with them. They're aligned with black people being eliminated. The white guys who were gay marching, saying Jews will not replace us in Charlottesville, it's black people being replaced. And so I agree with the sister in that, but we have to be honest. She says she's in the NAACP. Well, the NAACP is aligned with LGBTQ. The Urban League
well,
is.
Let me defend that.
You can't defend it.
Because
it's a fact. It's a fact, madam. It's a fact, madam. I'm sorry. It's a fact, madam. If you are part of the leadership conference on civil or human rights, you are with the gay movement.
Listen,
this is not emotion. This is fact. This is fact.
It's fact. I didn't say that it wasn't. I agree with you. That's not what I was saying. Okay.
Ms. Cassandra, you're tad bit muffled. Ms. Cassandra, can you please fix your mic because you're muffled and we can barely hear you.
So it is a fact, and that's what I was saying when he was talking. It's definitely a fact, and that is the problem that has been with the NAACP. And to further that, the NAACP, even with me, I've had a problem with the national NAACP for defending the argument that you just made. So I agree.
It goes deeper. I know on fact on that the NAACP supports the legalization of prostitution across this country, which would enslave black women, girls, boys, and men. And they will not fight against what I'm fighting in my city of Washington, D.C. There are seven states in Washington because you had Ben Jealous. Now, I worked with Ben Jealous. We had an argument the one time we spoke because I asked Ben Jealous, what's more important, protecting our people from genocide or two men having sex in a public restroom? And he went off on me, which said, let me know the two men having sex was more important than saving his people.
Right, and see, those are the things that I saw. Those are the things that I saw because I'm going to tell you something. They do not support my branch because of that. I'm very outspoken on a lot of those things because that is very true. And the more people learn, and I always say this, is to learn the history of the NAACP and any other branch, because I know exactly what you're talking about with Ben Jealous and the other ones that went down the line. I also know that the national NAACP, which I pushed for, should be out doing more. But again, you can't do more if you're attached to those things that are not beneficial to us, which makes it hard for people like me that has a branch under the umbrella of the NAACP to move forward because that is not what they want to fight.
The NAACP was compromised in its origin. If you look at the gentleman, William Monroe Trotter told those people 110 years ago, if black people don't fund it, it won't serve black people, which is why William Monroe Trotter refused to be a member of the NAACP. He'd rather die. And so I'll say to you, I'm right here in Baltimore. Just 2 days ago, I was talking to some black working men with Verizon, and the NAACP came up. And they couldn't believe, because I was from Washington, that I knew. I said, when you guys work for MCI and you were discriminated against, the NAACP stabbed you guys in the back in exchange for MCI to make their website. And they all had to nod their head and say, we've been betrayed by the NAACP. They do it over and over. It's always been a backstabbing organization. And so to me, the same sister, you probably know her, attorney St. George, Joe St. George, who's fighting against human trafficking, that the national NAACP will not combat the sexual trafficking. So the sexual slavery of black women and black girls is of no concern to them, but they're concerned about illegal aliens, and they're concerned about telling boys that they're girls and girls that they're boys,
and all of this because it is a group dominated by Jews.
And let me tell you this, and this is speaking to our state president here in Ohio, and I don't have a problem saying it because the truth has to be told. Just for those reasons, like you said, there has been a feud between this branch and the Nationals. Number one, the sex trafficking and human trafficking. We have a huge problem, as you know, that is worldwide, but we have a really huge problem here as well in the state of Ohio. I have not had assistance from the national at any level, nor the state. There has
you won't
been
get
issues
it.
That I,
you,
and I know I
you
won't, which is why,
you won't,
which is
you won't
why
get
I work, which is why I work through the Lawyers Foundation, which is a foundation that I have formed because I'm stepping away from the NAACP, but not until
God bless you.
I address those things because I'm not going to continue to fight against an organization that you signed up for to assist. But then you see they go against everything that you stand for, which is the correct thing to stand for. And it comes a time when these organizations and people in Congress, organizations like NAACP, you have to bring this to the forefront. Now, will it change? No, because like I said, look who funds the NAACP. Look who funds it. So those issues are going to be those issues. But at the same time, this it needs to be called out. It needs to be told because it's no different than them sitting here for how many years and where's their effectiveness and what is going on, especially in our community.
The NAACP needs a funeral just like Elijah Cummings is getting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't make a cyanide pill an aspirin. Sorry.
Yep.
I wanted to say something real fast. There's a group called the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights that Malcolm X warned us about 55 years ago. And now the Leadership Council for Civil and Human Rights has made the pedophile agenda and the homosexual agenda integral to the civil rights community. And by the way, the NAACP 42 years ago made gay rights and black rights integral. Actually, this happened with Benjamin Hooks, and it kicked up in the 80s.
He was gay.
Yes, of course he was. I know he's gay, but
that's
I'm glad you said
that.
Him. Yes, they outed him because he wouldn't come out against
I'm from
the
Memphis.
Anita Bryant.
Everybody around him knew he was gay.
Yeah, but they came after him after the Anita Bryant thing down in Florida. That's when he was pressed to do something. So, and by the way, who was the mentee of Benjamin Hooks? Benjamin Jealous, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, and I call him Boy Sellers. And I know his godmother. And anyway, I won't get into that. What I'm going to say to you is that the Leadership Conference for Civil Rights, Civil and Human Rights, the black churches, our Greek letter organizations, and many things are affiliated. If you're with the LCCHR, then you have to support the pedophile child molester, sex trafficking agenda of these Nazis, these sex Nazis. And our black churches and organizations all get the money, and therefore we're being betrayed by the elite class of black people, have slated us for destruction. And we need a civil war, and we need it now. We need to pull down and knock out the people that will not speak up. If you will not defend the black woman, you will not defend the black girl and boy, you will not advocate for the aged, you're an enemy of the people. And until we have this house cleaning, we're in peril of being wiped out. And we need to have this now. And so I don't honor the dead when they betrayed us. You don't hear white folks crying for Benedict Arnold. So you don't expect to see any crocodile tears from me. For anyone that would let people be poisoned all over this country and they had the power to do something about it.
See, you have to pick your alliances. At one time, the NAACP was the only game in town because black folk couldn't get the financing together. One female Jewish woman, one male, Jewish man, and W.E.B. Du Bois for the black man formed the NAACP. The whole idea was that they were going to use the Jewish funding to set this up. The Jews were worried about what was happening to them, so they were using the Negro or the colored person as a foil. In other words, if you couldn't do it to a colored person, you definitely couldn't do it to a Jew. So one of the early theories through the first half of the 20th century was to use the SPCA laws. That's the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And the theory was, is if you couldn't do it to a dog, you couldn't do it to a Negro. If you couldn't do it to a Negro, you couldn't do it to a Jew. And that's been the basis for what you have with the NAACP. From time to time, it's proved advantageous. At other times, it's dysfunctional. Some time ago, the Hollywood componentry that's set up with the separate entity, the Image Awards, which is a separate incorporated entity from the NAACP principally, it's been taken over by the Hollywood industry, and they claim to be 85 to 90% LGBTQ. So they have used their influence through the Image Awards to take control of a lot of the NAACP policy. So they've converted it again to, if you can't do it to an African-American, you can't do it to an LGBTQ type. So again, the NAACP has been subverted from anything that's remotely primarily interested in color, the black, Negro, African-American, Afro-American, black person. It is, again, an organization that's primarily for the benefit of a third entity, in this case LGBTQ, who are befriended by the Jewish community because so many of their members out in Hollywood are, well, so many Hollywood entities are both Jewish and LGBTQ. So again, the black person is supposed to be the foil, so that if it can't be done to somebody black, it can't be done to LGBTQ. And we're secondary. Our problem is that our elected officials get our votes to get in office and then do nothing for us but everything for what I call the Skittles crowd, who want you to taste the rainbow. And that is our problem right now. We have no effective leadership, and what our transparent leadership is about is not us. They simply take the lookalike factor and try to get in office so they can do something for somebody else. They have also seen a thing that is most dangerous to black people, and that is a lot of black people who establish themselves in positions where they can opt out can become LGBTQ and become part of a larger, more, well, not larger, but more popular minority and reap the benefits of being in the camp of both black and queer. By the way, that's what the Q stands for in LGBTQ, is queer. So using their own terminology, questioning or queer, you can become black and queer and get the advantages of both. You can get elected to an office playing back and get benefits being queer. So that's exactly what they're doing. Interestingly enough, a lot of LGBT types get upset if you say queer, but that's what LGBT site says Q stands for, queer.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, Judge? I call it queer crow. It's a race system that they run on this. Queer crow is what we're dealing with.
Well, let me say this in passing. I want to read the quote that Congressman Cummings had stated in a committee meeting in the House of Representatives over 20 years ago. And this is what he said. This morning I left my community of Baltimore, a drug-infested area where a lot of the drugs we are talking about today have already taken the lives of so many children. The same children that I watched 14 or 15 years ago as they grew up, now walking around like zombies. This is how he saw his city. This is how he saw the city that he was put in charge of to represent. He saw it as a drug-infested, rat-infested, zombie-like creatures walking the streets. And so, you know, he critiqued so strongly Trump's evaluation of the city, and he himself, 20 years before, saw the same thing, and it's only gotten worse. And it's a sad commentary where we lift up folk who see their own folk as being drugged zombies.
The way I'm looking at this whole thing is black folk have never been this country's priority about anything. We have always been a problem, and sometimes we are more or less a problem from their perspective. meaning the majority of the population, or at least those that speak for the majority. That being the case, we are not going to get what we seem to expect, which is somehow or another, after 200 plus years, we are supposed to get a fair shake. We're not going to get it, but we keep asking for it. Either reparations, which we're probably entitled to, but do you really expect these people to give you that after they have been so reluctant to even treat you with equality? Certainly not. They're not going to unask money. But we look at it as our solution is reparations. It's not, because what you're likely to get isn't going to get you anywhere unless it's just the boost for a particular investment. Maybe the key to starting a business, which most aren't going to do. And we've got to start being realistic about who we support, what our goals are, what our outlooks happen to be, what our perspectives are. We've got to start getting educated. We've got to understand that if we want to have an economy, the standard economy is glutted with deep, deep pockets and big, big batch situations that we can't possibly match. We don't have the money. So the only way we're going to do something is for our children to get deep into STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, and come up with something new that can be pushed. Look at the SiliconValley.com revolution and everything else that's been going on, and you'll see that technology is the key. We don't get into that. We want to do black studies, which it's good to know about your people. Wouldn't hurt for a few specialized history teachers to teach it. But the majority of our children don't need to major in black studies. They need to get into science, technology, engineering, and math so they can do something in the modern world. We need political control again, but we are enslaved on the Democratic Party plantation, and that's just become the gay party circle while we are outside waiting on them. So we have to do something, and we have to start becoming ruthless. In 25, 30 years, the country is going to be no longer a majority white country. It will be all minorities, and we're going to have to start setting up coalitions. But nobody wants to be in a coalition with us because we don't do a damn thing except act emotionally, and we're good for entertainment. But much past that, it's like, oh, wow, we whoopee, what an awesomely trained animal we have over here. So as long as that's the outlook that we take about ourselves and that people take about us, we'll go nowhere. So we have to reform our attitude and start thinking in terms of what we can do in the modern world that's different from what's been done before. I'll just end it with that.
Ms. Cassandra, your mic is live.
Yeah, you know, this, of course, you know, this show and always brings about, you know, truth. Judge Joe Brown always gives it to us straight, like we need it. And, you know, we have to start challenging those things that are not, you know, are not correct, or those things that are not positively affecting us, and that includes the people. You know, we have to really be honest about who we are becoming bedfellows with and the alliances and so forth that we form. And it's okay if you form an alliance and you later figure out that it's not working. It's okay to get away from that and get into something that you know, matches what your beliefs are, especially when it comes to trying to make those changes in a political field, or, you know, even policy. We have gotten away from, you know, being individuals. We're not individual thinkers. We're so cliquish and in these different groups. Just because you know someone does not mean that they're good for that particular seat. So, you know, these are some of the things, you know, go outside the box, see if you can form your own and move forward. But we can't stay like this.
Does anybody want to bless or say God bless the dead at all? I'm not sure. Maybe the pastor would like to. 267-867. 267-867. Is anybody praying for his soul?
You can't pray for what belongs to the devil.
Oh, my.
Bishop Scott?
Yes.
Your mic is live. Any final words? No, it's not a request.
Oh.
I was just.
Oh, oh,
Okay.
Talking out loud.
No, we need to pray. We need to pray that we as a people will become more conscious of reality and not live in a fantasy. That we don't allow others to dictate who we consider persons that have been to our advantage. To be a hero because you are against Donald Trump after 25 years of serving in the most august body, in the most powerful body, legislative body in the world, and your note of fame is standing 3 years against Donald Trump. To me, that's a sad commentary when you're a hero because of that, where your own community, where even your community still sees you as being of great value, ignoring the fact that they have to step over people that are laying in grates because they're homeless and they have no place to go, ignoring the fact that drug use is prevalent all over the place and that rubbish and garbage is everywhere, ignoring the fact that the school system is in disarray, ignoring all of that and still calling this man a hero is a travesty. And I think it goes across the country. We look at a person's skin before we look at a person's heart. And we have to begin to look at a person's character rather than their reputation. Character is who we really are. Reputation is who others think we are. And so we look and we elect and we decide on who to vote for by reputation, not by character. And so until we begin to move and not be afraid to vote folk out that have been there too long and have done too little for our people, and we're just tired of it. Nothing's going to happen for us or to us until we make a stand and make things happen for ourselves. And the first thing we do is when we go to the voting booth, we need to go educated, knowing what these people have done in our community and not looking at what color they are, and then voting for the best person that will improve our lives. And we have to understand, as just like Judge Brown has said and others have said, we have to understand that we have to be our own defenders. We have to be our own protectors. We have to be our own advocates. And until we become our own advocates, no one really is going to be an advocate for us.
Dr. Short, 443-833.
Yes, I'm here. Brothers and sisters, right. It's true that racism and injustice and oppression, but black people are a lot like a person that's been shot in the gut and they're on the sidewalk. But what our traitor leadership and our compromised people are like someone who saw someone shot in the gut and they came and pulled their pants down and made a bowel movement on top of the wound to the abdomen. And their reasoning is, well, you were already down there, so what I did wasn't as bad as the person that shot you. And that is the morality of our black leadership and the church and across the board. Nothing bad that I can do, I'm not accountable for any wickedness that I've done because there's greater wickedness that's already been done, as if it's a race to the bottom, and we have to stop that. That's one. Number two, we have to, the Bible says what contaminates or putrefies or ruins a person isn't what they put in their mouth or what comes out of them. It is not necessarily our environment. It's not even the people who hate our guts. It's what we refuse to do for self. I was talking to Dr. Blakey. He's the person that ran the African Burial Ground Project. He's at William & Mary. And he was sharing with me that he had a page from a book by Dr. Leo Hansberry. And it said something to the effect that Howard University has all the intellectual ability in the world to solve all the problems of black people, but they don't have the will to do it. And at some point, the masses of us are going to have to get sick of our celebrities, our stars, our preachers, or whatever. And if you're not about the business, you're treated like your refuse. We have to rediscover shame and righteous indignation in our community and apply it, not just to when the white cop kills my cousin Freddie Gray, but when someone murders or rapes or robs or won't patronize. We must become a people who are principled and righteous and respectful of one another and apply that to our economics, to our society, to our culture, and band together. And we have to understand that we're going to lose a lot of people, and maybe that's a good thing. But we should
to try to build community. We have to be honest. We have no leaders. We don't really have the institutional independence or structures in place to shield us from what we're facing, and we better get it quick, damn fast, and in a hurry. And so that's what I'm saying. And it can be done. There's a quote that says, God's arm isn't so short it can't save, nor is his ear so waxed that it can't hear. We are capable. The real question is do we have the will to live? Whenever you look at a war, it's not the technology or the number of soldiers. It is the desire to fight, the fire in the belly. This is why they're demoralizing us with all this LGBTQ and the drugs and the bad food and the filthy music, is to make us lose our moral compass, to lose our will to be free, to lose our sense of ourselves and our greatness, or our reverence for our elders like the judge, and our concern for our youth and for our women, to protect our women, to this need to restore true manhood and true womanhood, which was the conversation of our ancestors that came out of chattel slavery. We must come back to that, get rid of the sports and the other stuff, and even the stupid stuff in church, and get into God made man and woman, and what can man and woman, black man and black woman, do together to preserve our people. Go back to Africa. All of you guys, you don't, you're reparations for you. Go back to Africa.
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts.
Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.